Yeah, at some point, though, it's going to be the amount. Like, especially I've noticed with Digital Foundry starting to take real issue with the amount of RAM on the graphics cards.
Yeah.
They're, like, increasingly, like, 16 gig is kind of like the new minimum that you want. And I'm like, great! You know how much money you have to spend to get more than 16 gig? I looked up a 5090. It is more than my budget for the entire fucking PC. Like, I knew it was ridiculous, but that was next level ridiculous. Holy shit.
Yeah, that's a lot of wind.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 168 of the Player 2 podcast. My name's Matt Houston, and I am here on a two-man show tonight to talk about PC gaming. The other man that's going to talk about PC gaming is a man who's hunting right now for a brand new PC, and that's Tim Henderson. How are you, mate?
Yeah. Mostly good. Like, this is a fucking nightmare, though, if you actually want to understand what you're buying. But you, like, in my head, this got simpler than it was, like, 10, 20 years ago. It really hasn't.
No, there's still all the tricks of the trade that you need if you're really getting into the nitty-gritty and not just trusting the vendor, I guess.
Yeah. That's later, though. That's later.
We'll talk about that nightmare in a moment.
We'll also talk about PC games or something, I guess.
Yeah, well, first we're talking about a game that, I think everyone is talking about in some way, shape, or form. It melted down shop fronts everywhere. It destroyed the internet. It broke wish list records. Tim.
Yeah.
You've been playing Solitaire. I mean, Silksong.
I was actually pretty bloody impressed when I saw that Steam had been kneecapped by this.
Yeah, that's a good tick on your box, isn't it?
I kind of just, like I said, because, you know, it was midnight Australia, like 11 p.m. Japan. It's like, I don't have time to download and play this. I'm going to fucking bed. But I did try to open the eShop just to see if it would work. Because I expected that from the Nintendo side. But then I'm like, looking at my Blue Sky feed, and it's like, oh, literally every storefront is down.
I think the worst part, they didn't allow preload and they didn't do any pre-orders.
Yeah,
you should
have done preloading it. It's weird because it seems that they were very, very cautious about like keeping this. Like, everybody does this at once. But then apparently like the Chinese translator went rogue and it just seems like a bit of a dick in general. But yeah, what a year is turning out for Aussie gaming. And I'm going to use this as a brief excuse to talk about the game I really want to talk about. But we've spoken about Death Stranding 2 for two episodes going now. But like when I was, you know, midnight was approaching, I was playing the second of two. Well, there's probably going to be more. Death Stranding, people generally know what it is. It's kind of like they'll get from point A to point B without destroying a parcel game. And the first few missions, as you would expect, are like, okay, here's the thing. Take it from this place A to this place B and, you know, don't destroy it on the way. And then eventually that you start to get some more meaningful, okay, go here, fix this, and then go here, and then go back. So the first two meaningful missions in this, you'd say, where it like starts to get more complicated. The first one is you have to like re-establish a mining facility and go back. And then the second one, which is what I was doing just before Hollow Knight, is basically boils down to having to rescue a kangaroo from a bushfire. I'm like, wow, like, it's probably an accident. I want to say, like, Kojima, like, chef's kiss on, like, that escalated quickly, like, that kind of cultural storyline.
Yep.
But yeah, going from that to, like, Silksong just crashing everything. So this is an interesting year for Australia and video games in general. By far, probably the largest budget AAA game ever set in the country. And now Silksong seems like it is probably the biggest release of the year, and I don't see anything topping it with Grand Theft Auto way out of the way.
Yeah, it's probably going to be the biggest sales. I mean, the only thing that will maybe come close is Call of Duty, just because it sells ridiculous amounts every year. But I don't even know if Call of Duty will do the numbers.
Silksong's only $30 as well, which...
Yeah.
I'm in such a mixed thing. I'm, on one hand, like I was happy as like $30, and that's the Switch 2 version. Like, there's no premium. It's just like go in, jump on thing, runs great. I do feel bad for like other indies who are like, man, like we know that this game is going to be so huge. Like, just in terms of actual content as well as just like the hype surrounding and like, can we like play? Like, do we have to lower our price by $10 now to like seem reasonable? I don't really know what's going on there.
It does create an interesting kind of dynamic there, doesn't it?
But yeah, it is. I mean, I bought the original Shovel Knight on PC, and my Steam copy remains unplayed. I think I end up just playing a PlayStation Plus version of it. Didn't get as obsessed as other people. Like, I do still think the thing that first made this game take off, and it's why his timing is kind of perfect again, is that Switch release. And I think sales over at Kotaku, where he was at the time, going, this is the perfect Switch game. And it is. Like, it is a very good handheld game. Really helped it, like, take off. And Silksong is, I guess, if you know what Shovel Knight is, it's exactly what you'd expect in terms of, like, controls and vibes and looks. And it just looks so fucking good. It is what? There's, like, two or three people in the studio, I guess.
Yeah, it's very small.
I mean, in the case of Silksong now, it makes sense that it can be this polished because, you know, they have all the money they ever need for life. They are set up. They could just work on this game until they were happy to put it out. There was, like, no external pressure that would mean anything to them. But go back and remember the first one. Like, that was also pretty, pretty impressive looking, pretty polished.
Yeah, it was kickstarted too.
Yeah. But there is, it feels like there's an extra layer of polish on this. It is weird because it's like, wow, this looks better than I remember. And I was kind of expecting it to, like, be like, oh, it's a bit. Although, like, even small things, like when you jump on a platform and, like, it kind of, you can hear it creak and, like, this dust will kind of fall down below it.
Yeah, nice.
It's like, it's just oozing that life from, like, every little corner. Super charming. Something about the energy of it, like, just reminds me about, like, being back in art school as well, where it's like, you can just tell that these people are working on a personal project.
And there's care in it.
And also, like, they are the students that care. They the ones who, like, kind of got into the vibe and were paying attention to the lectures and were like, okay, you know what? Parties and getting drunk is fun and all, but, like, I'm actually really enjoying drawing these little animations with these bugs. Oh, and it's, yeah, because it's just got such style, because it's not, like, the most technically advanced drawings in the world, but they look great because they have, like, that guy just has his own style. I wish I should know their names. I've read them multiple times, but I'm terrible with names, so sorry, guys, I'm sure you're fine. Adelaide, yeah. But mechanically, I don't know, I've played somewhere between 5 and 10 hours so far. I am not good at this. I'm not great at it. I can't pin it on the game, though. The game feels great. It feels every bit as good as I remember the first one feeling. It has a maybe superfluous 120 frames per second mode, which I've played in both handheld, because the Switch 2 can apparently do that. It seems like a redundant feature for that screen, and on my TV. Honestly, I'm not sure if you did not show me which was which and, like, flicked back and forth between the 60 and 120, if I could tell the difference. It doesn't seem like the sort of game where that really matters. It may matter in the feel, I guess, but I don't think it's very perceptible to the eye. But yeah, so far I've killed one boss. I've had my butt absolutely handed to me numerous times by another, and this is something about myself that I'm going to have to get over, where, like, I hate, it's like that unfinished thing going to bed. It's like, I need a like, nice little endpoint. Like, I want to finish the episode of the TV show I'm watching, or, like, get to the next actual save point and checkpoint. That's on me. That's my brain being broken. I can ignore all of the stupid loot in the world. You cannot ruin me by putting just fucking Ubisoft vomit all over the map. I'll be like, fuck it, I'll just do it if I want to. But, like, when it comes to, like, this challenge that is left undone, and I think I'm going to have to accept that some bosses you can maybe come back to and maybe aren't essential, and, like, get good, man. And by get good, we don't mean just keep on grinding until you're good. It means, like, just keep on playing and come back and you'll find out that you're better. Or at least I hope so. Still charming as hell. I forgot, like, these bugs sing these little songs. It seems like they're all Catholic, but rosary beads are, like, your main currency now. And a lot of stuff, like, bringing things back. It's hard because it's been years since I played Hollow Knight, because I wasn't one of the people who went back and then went through it, because there are many, many super devout Hollow Knight people. I am not one of them. I bought this because, hey, it's a big Australian game. That seems cool. And honestly, also because, like, how much native Switch 2 gaming is there at the moment?
Not an awful lot.
Especially, again, after reviewing Ninja Gaiden and being like, going, boy, this would be a little bit better if it, like, was a native app.
Yeah.
It is nice that this is a native app, and it seems like it runs super well and everything.
Yeah.
Part of me is, like, small envy is like, I bet this looks really fucking good in the Switch OLED screen. Stupid fucking LCD on the that's maybe a bit harsh. It looks better than Ninja Gaiden did in handheld mode, and it feels great in handheld mode. It is, like, a pretty ideal.
It's using the Switch natively, not through.
Yeah. It helps that the pixels and everything fit, and also maybe the art, and also just kind of more generous, and the speed probably more generously fits to it. The upgrade system seems a little bit more fleshed out than what I remember. Like, it seems like you can get multiple pins effectively that, like, give you, like, different abilities. So far I'm able to throw my needle, and I may have to remap the buttons because I keep getting that and the refresh your health button mixed up. So be like, I'm about to die, got to refresh, and then accidentally just throw an attack and hit nothing, and now like I've also lost my health recharge, and it's like game over. Back to start. We'll see a week from now if I like get used to that or not.
Yeah.
I had a similar issue with Donkey Kong on Switch 2, where the jump button was not the same as in Mario, and like, what the fuck? Or at least not the same one I was using. I was like, what the fuck are you doing, guys? Like, this is...
Yep. Yeah.
But I can't give like fully fledged opinions yet. Apparently some reviews have already dropped, which... I mean, I'm sure they played it through, but...
Oy. Did they really? I don't know.
I mean, this is an achievement for like speedrunning it in like 5 or 6 hours or something, but... So if they were a Hollow Knight sicko, it is entirely possible that they did. But even maybe, but then, like...
Even then, you're missing so much of this game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really making me like think back to like how... I mean, aside from nostalgia, like magazines were just a much better way for getting stuff reviewed because... Nobody was rushing to be like the first to hit Metacritic before anybody else. And like, okay, we go to print in 3 weeks, so you've got 3 weeks to play this. And it was just a much healthier one for the reviewer. I think two for like the actual output as well, because like you're playing at a more sensible pace. Anyway, Huso, I believe that you've been playing something by maybe your favorite person ever.
Not quite my favorite person, but yes, I've been playing the new game from Justin Gollop, who created the original XCOM, not like the Firaxis XCOM from... the 2000s, but like the 1994,
back to DOS, baby.
Yeah, 3 version of XCOM. And he also created an XCOM like called Phoenix Point a few years ago, which was a very good take on that kind of turn-based combat strategy thing.
Phoenix Point is much more of an easy-to-remember, regular-ass video game name, though.
Yes, this game is called Chip and Claws versus the Brainoids. It is, you know, what you would expect looks wise from a name like that. It's very kind of
Mars Attacks, kind of. That's what I'm imagining.
Or kind of ratchet and clanky.
All right.
In kind of vibe. You know, you've got a main guy who's Chip, and Claws is his cat sidekick robot.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yep. And basically, this game is kind of light real time strategy, light third person action game.
Okay.
The closest game I can think of that it feels like is a game called Overlord. There was a few.
Overlord.
Yeah,
I was thinking Brutal Legend actually, but
yeah, a little bit of Brutal Legend, but yeah, Overlord was this game where you had like these minions and different minions did different things and you could control them all, and
it was kind of like growing up Pikmin with like a Terry Pratchett art style kind.
Yeah,
of.
Yeah, that's that kind of thing.
Happened to that actually? Those two games were like kind of like not gigantic, but they were there. They were pretty good, big for like a few years.
I think the studio shut down sadly, but yeah. So anyway, this game, that's closest. There's a bit of tower defense as well in this. So basically how it plays out is, there's an alien invasion. They pinched bits of Earth, for whatever weird reason.
That's like a very cute way of describing.
Yeah, they've like stolen bits of Earth with these bubbles. And so you're flying into these bubbles to kind of get it back. And, you do that by unlocking each level. You start with your character, you run around, and there are these little points where you can unlock different towers to build. And these towers build different minions, so different robots that help you out. There's like the mining robots, which give you more of the resource. Then there's the, you know, boxing robot, which is pretty logical. The shooting robot, which once again, there's an artillery robot, there's a flying robot, and then there's also a few towers as well to protect your own base. And the game becomes like a base versus base game where your goal is to kill the enemy's base while at the same time protecting yours with your minions. So that's where the kind of the RTS stuff comes into it. And you can direct different minions to do different things quite easily. It uses D-pad controls very well. There's only 40.
I've been assuming you're playing this on PC, by the way.
No, I'm playing on... I am playing on PC, but I'm also playing with a controller.
D-pad.
Yeah, yeah. And it works better on a gamepad, I think. It's been very much designed with a gamepad in mind. So, yeah, for example, you can set up your artillery out of range. You can put them in a point where they're out of range from enemy towers, but they'll reach the enemy tower, and then you can protect them with your boxes, so anyone coming nearby to attack artillery will get taken down. These sort of things that can all be done with just very easy button presses. So, you know, it works really well. I'm about 2 hours into it, and I'm going to review it. But there seems to be quite a bit of a surprising amount of depth with the simple systems that are in play. And also, you as the hero can run around and bash things as well if you want. You know, you do a bit of damage, but you get overwhelmed quite easily. So running in with six or seven enemies, you'll most likely die. There's no penalty for dying. You just respawn. The only way to lose the match is if your base gets destroyed.
How an RTS works.
Yeah, yeah. So it's a smart little system. There's little mini goals in between the main goal of destroying the enemies, which you've got to unlock certain areas by spending a certain amount of resources here, or pushing a bridge down, or destroying a certain watchtower, or capturing a certain building, and all these things come together in a nice cartoony sort of way. I don't think it's an expensive sort of game. I think it's about the $30 mark. And yeah, it's well put together. There seems to be no problems at all tech wise. It works really, really well. It's very polished. There's definitely some depth there for people that like a strategy sort of game, and it's quite unique. So I'm enjoying it. I think it's a nice little in-between title. It's the sort of title I could see people really enjoying in between something big and deep and dark. You know, they're playing even something like Death Stranding. You know, it's the sort of refresher game. You play a couple of missions of this in between a big session in Death Stranding or something like that. So, yeah, I reckon check it out.
Yeah, it just needs to get its name out there a little bit more, because I had literally not heard about this until pre-show you said, I'm playing this game with this crazy-ass name.
Yeah.
But it's by the guy who made XCOM, and like, well, that's why Huso's playing it.
Yeah, I literally got the PR blast for it, saw who made it, and I went, well, that's got my interest, yes. So, yeah, I grabbed it through there, and it's been really good. So it's one of those games that obviously has no marketing behind it. Apart from a PR blast to press. And, you know, so many of these indie games get a blast from an email and that's it. And when every morning, a bit of inside baseball, every morning I wake up with 30 or more emails in my inbox. You know, so it is very, very easy to miss something. And it makes it hard to cover everything we want to cover.
Even like an IGN or a GameSpot cannot effectively do it.
No. So, you know, just happened to be the name that caught my eye. You know, if they hadn't have led that, I probably would have skipped over it again, you know.
Yeah.
Go check it out.
I'm happy for you that it's good, though, because, like, every now and then it'll be like, new game from Yuji Naka, and then it always, like, turns out to be, like, majorly disappointing. So,
yeah. This one definitely feels like it's a pet project. It's the kind of thing that I feel like maybe Double Fine would enjoy making or something like that, you know. Quirky little passion project sort of feel to it, and some funny dialogue. You know, very
walking lighthouse, like just to like bring it all.
Not quite, but you know, there's some definitely some cheesy kind of dad puns and stuff all through it, and you know, it's there's a lot of charm to it. I'm quite enjoying it. I think it's well worth checking out. All right, we might move on there. We're going to have a break, get a cup of tea, and then we're going to talk about the deep and dark serious business of PC gaming.
Of PC gaming.
Welcome back. I'm sure there were some funky tunes from Tim there. I have no idea what theme he's going to go for the break, but I'm sure it'll be entertaining enough to help you start thinking about PC gaming, because that's where we're going right now. PC gaming is kind of the oddity in the gaming world in a lot of ways. generally requires a lot more money and commitment, but also has a lot more flexibility, I think, than consoles. And I've been a long PC gamer my entire life, and Tim, you seem to have dropped in and out.
Yeah, I mean, one, like, yeah, PC games, I think ever since COVID, PC gaming has gone way more mainstream because a lot of the biggest games can be played on whatever computer people had in the house at the time, and they have not moved on from those.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, things like Fortnite and what else? Fortnite.
Rocket. Minecraft is probably going...
Minecraft's up there, yeah.
Forever. Apex Legends has been really big.
Yeah, dirty actually, I mean, Roblox.
That's a PS4 game, but any PC bought in the last 5-6 years is easily going to run that.
Yeah, yeah. So it's an interesting spot, I think, PC gaming at the moment, because there seems to be, for the first time, a whole bunch of innovation in the form factor of PCs as well now. So it's creating a whole new market, essentially.
That could actually affect the other market. A big part of one thing, like this push to get everything Steam Deck verified, is like the scalability.
Yeah.
Is entering a new era.
I think what it's going to do is unless you're very confident in your game selling a zillion on PC only, you want it to be on as many systems as possible. So there's very few games like A Crisis, for example, to throw out an old name, that can rely on just being a tech showpiece anymore.
It says a lot that Crisis is still the game that, like, Crisis is almost 20. Crisis is old enough to drink in Australia.
Yeah, yeah. It's an old, old, old game, but it was such a, I think, phenomenon when it came out that literally melting computers. It was that far ahead of its time, and that just doesn't fly these days with the cost of game development and you know, general cost of living. They just can't get away with it because the return on investment wouldn't be there.
We were discussing before, like, I'm looking at different PC builds and I've got a certain budget I'm trying to work within, and annoyingly, when I bought the PC I'm on now, which is going on 13 years old, I've upgraded the graphics card once, but when I bought it, it's like, oh, PCs had gotten way better value. This is, like, definitely cheap, and it's gone back up again. I, like, was kind of sweet spotting like that V before it started, crypto basically happened and everything kind of
jumped.
Swung back up, but it was like, yeah, 5090 is more than my entire PC budget. Like, the, if you want to go premium, it's not just the next level up, it is a fucking elevator, like, past multiple floors to the penthouse.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's not a cheap road if you want to be at the top of the pops, but I don't think these days you have to be. I mean, I think you get my kids they've got one of my old gaming PCs, which has got a 2080 in it. There isn't a game that's come out that they can't play on.
Yeah, this I'm envious of, because when I did buy mine, I got a 680.
Yeah.
We weren't at the next zero yet. And that was, what, late 2012. And I had to pump the brakes for the first time in 2016. And this is going to come back to something that I was ranting at you about earlier. And that was because I decided, instead of, like, upgrading the card at the time, I think the 10 series had just come out. And I was thinking about maybe getting a 1060 that would still, you know, it's a lower level in the tier, but time has gone by, architecture's improved, whatever, it would still be an upgrade over the 680. And I got a PS4 Pro instead. On face value, I still don't regret that. But the Hyper website was still somewhat up, kind of piggybacking on PC Authority, and I was, like, commissioned to review Wolfenstein 2, a game I was very enthusiastic to play, and I made it very clear, it's like, hey, especially since I just got the Pro, like, send me the PS4 version. And then PR apparently sent the PC code anyway. And it turns out 2 gigs of VRAM was just not enough. Like, that game, I could never get past. I could get it to run, but it would always crash in the opening sequence. And apparently, since the 20 series, which initially was disappointing because, you know, nothing had ray tracing and they weren't that big a raster improvement over the 10, but they're still kicking around.
Yeah, yeah, they're still going strong. And like I said, my kids have got a 2080 in theirs, and they still, like, you know, they've got to modify the levels of the game. Like, you can't run it on Ultra or anything like that, but they can still run it. And the difference these days between lower settings and high settings isn't as big as it used to be. Like, I remember back in the day when you were trying to get games run, you could get it basically down to a wireframe to try and get it to run, you know.
Whereas, I remember specifically the Need for Speed demo on that old 486. In that case, yes. I don't think there were detailed settings, but just changing the resolution up, yes. up to 480p, by the way. That was a high-res mode. Like, it looked so much better, but it just tanked the frame. It was actually quite playable in, like, 240 or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think these days the difference, and I think that part of that is because of, you know, Steam Deck and ROG Ally and all the handhelds that are coming out now.
So probably diminishing returns. Like, I've noticed, like, we're at the point where YouTube doesn't have enough bit rate to, like, Digital Foundry will, like, show you, like, the medium-high ultra settings, and you'll be looking at the TV going, I can't tell the meaningful difference, man. It's and very possible that might still be if you're looking at it native, but...
And there's games that have come out this year that I've played on the ROG and the PC, and they're big games. And on the small screen, I can't tell the difference.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it helps with your screen is like 7 or 8 inches, definitely. Yeah.
You know, and it still runs. And once again, we're back at how it's how the game runs more than how it looks, I guess. And if they can get that right and the feel of it, I think art direction and things go a long way, and all these other tricks to the trade to make a game look good at lower technical settings instead of just relying on brute force. I just don't think that's a viable path anymore, really, for anyone, perhaps, except for something like Rockstar or, you know, even id Tech. Like, id Tech is the most amazingly scalable technology, and I'm so surprised Microsoft hasn't used it for other things, you know?
I mean, by all accounts, Indiana Jones runs spectacularly. And I think that's one of the VRAM issues, though. It's like, as long as you have enough VRAM, like, you could. So I think a 2080 could run it really well, but like a 460 if you're like the 8 gig card or something, like, actually has problems. It's an issue for me, though, because I will not buy a Microsoft game until they actually stop genocide funding, which sucks because I want to play Indian Double Fine, but probably sucks more because, you know, people dying perspective and shit. But yeah, you do get, you still get your Alan Wake 2s, though.
You certainly do. You got an Alan Wake 2. But I think, once again, it was pretty scalable. I don't know that it runs on a handheld, but it still scales pretty well to a range of systems. I could even work on a ROG Ally. I never tried it, to be honest. It's not the sort of game I want to play on a small screen, though. So it never urged me to.
Yeah, it's one of the, like, just see can it be done.
Yeah, can it be done sort of things. I'm sure someone has. So you wouldn't take long to Google to find out. But I think PCs now, for me anyway, have become a center part of my lounge room for everything. Like my lounge room, I've got a PC in my lounge room, which is connected to the computer, which is also my Plex server. So all my old DVDs and Blu-rays and stuff are on it.
You know, so you get a phone call from your dad once a week saying, I can't watch the Doctor Who's, what's wrong?
Yeah, yeah. No, we've sorted that out. I've sorted old man tech support out. You know, and he's got all of his movies that he wanted, that my mum some reason wanted to throw out, and he never did. So I put them all on the Plex server for him so he could watch them. You know, those sort of things. And it's become, it's my jukebox, you know, in the lounge room. It's my Plex server. It's my game system. It's becoming more and more central to my household. All the TVs in the house connect to that Plex server, you know, so PCs are becoming more synonymous. And obviously I get, I'm probably in a small use scenario at this point in time.
I am fairly enthusiast and I'm probably not going to go quite that deep down the rabbit hole.
And it's surprising. It was surprisingly simple. I did it out of it because I had an old laptop lying around at first and just tried it with that. And it was easy.
It's actually a weird concern now that I will probably just give away my current rig, and like any new PC I buy will not have a DVD or Blu-ray drive. I may have to buy an external Blu-ray drive at some point to rip everything.
I did. That's what I had to do. Not lucky they're not expensive, but yeah, I had to buy an external. Bought it from Amazon. I had to get it. I couldn't get one in Australia. I had to order it from Amazon. So yeah, that was the biggest challenge I had with the with ripping everything onto Plex.
I think a big part of also what's flattened the scene, I guess, to a certain degree. Again, I was like kind of complaining that like there is no monitor that fits that fits what I want. So like that premier single player high end game is like not really catered for in gaming gear gaming circles. I'm like, can I have a 120 refresh rate? Like, that's nicely divisible by 60 or 144 or whatever. I don't need 360. That's more than I'm gonna. And the reason why it's more than I'm gonna want is because I play single player games almost exclusively. And the reason for buying my reason for changing my PC is this one's just old and like I literally can take a shower and make a cup of coffee before Windows boots up. And Windows 10 is going to become a security sieve next year.
Yes, yeah. It'll be a target.
But the reason why, like, you know, I'm going to spend the money for that is like, I do want to play Alan Wake 2 with all the bells and whistles. So why the fuck aren't they making monitors for like single player games where you don't need 500 bazillion hertz, but you do have like proper HDR and nice local dimming or something?
I think PC with HDR, it's less a monitor issue and it's more how Windows uses it.
Yeah.
So that's an unfortunate side effect.
That's probably why the monitors are not supporting it much. Like, it's actually a pretty hard thing to find. Like, it really narrows your search a lot once you...
Yeah, and I think Windows' implementation of HDR is a bit shit.
Which is kind of, like, it was not wild 5 years ago, but it's such a standard...
Yeah.
Standard now. Like, HDR is a thing that everything has.
It may
like,
come
more
out
than HK, it became the... More than 8K, it became the new...
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And it may come with the new gaming-focused update of Windows 11 that they're doing, which would be nice.
It may be a blind optimism on my part, but why I do want HDR definitely to be supported in any new monitor that I...
Yeah. And I think it will get there. It just hasn't been a priority. But now that I think there's been a definite push from Microsoft to make Windows more gaming friendly, and that's what's coming with the new handheld, and it's going to eventually make it to all the other handhelds and other PCs as well, is a fully controllable, controller-friendly version of Windows that gets rid of all the shit in the background and just lets you play games. Like,
it would immediately make the ROG Ally a better system.
Oh, 100%. I love my ROG Ally, but Windows is the biggest handicap on it. And the only reason I don't put Steam OS on it is because I do have a lot of games on other shop fronts and it's a pain in the ass.
I have a lot of Epic Store games and I've never paid for a single one. Like, I mean, that's day one, just like a routine. Actually, that is part of like why this cost thing is like so weird in my head, because it's like getting in the door to like hardcore gaming feels as expensive as it's ever been. We're back at the point where like Street Fighter 2 cartridges and the SNES cost like $120 or something ridiculous. But on the other hand, again, if you just have like an okay PC or laptop that's just used for schoolwork at home, like a lot of the shit that's free on Epic, and there is something free every week.
And if you're a member of Amazon, you get free games every week. If you
the shit you can get on Humble, dude, like if you
Humble bundles are amazing. Like the Humble Choice this month has WWE 2K25, the latest one.
Not what I would have led with.
But you know what I mean. Like, that's a game that's still going for $90 in the store. Like, it hasn't had any significant discounts yet, but you can get it for $15 with that month with eight other games.
The wild thing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's got fucking Monkey Island in there, dude. Leave was something that I care about. But, yeah, it also has Monkey Island.
Island was never a $90 game, though.
Return to Monkey Island.
Yeah.
Plucky Squire, this one that kind of, like, I had a slightly high hopes for, but, like, what is it? It's like $15 a month. And here's the wild thing is you can just cancel.
Yeah, yeah. You can just sign up for any month that you want, really. It's just like a bundle that you got to remember to cancel.
I feel a little bit of dick. I've done that a few times. I really just like purchase it as like a one-off bundle as opposed to... But yeah, the pro tip there is like before you buy anything on a Steam sale, always check.
Yeah, yeah.
Humble and Fanatical, actually.
And also, Green Man Gaming is another one. It's worldwide supported. They're legitimate, you know.
Is it Green Man Gaming? I've seen some pretty dodgy stuff there before. Or am I thinking somewhere else? Definitely somewhere where it's like PS5 keys and they were actually selling you an account that somebody had actually bought the game on.
No,
like
Green Man Gaming. They've got official partnerships with Ubisoft and Capcom and places like that. So they're legitimate stuff. So, yeah, I've used them plenty of times. And they generally on the Steam sale go another 5 or 10% off whatever the Steam sale price is. So it's worth checking out. Yeah. There is like you can get so many games for cheap.
Free stuff. Once you have the hardware.
Yeah.
Like it's like beyond like even when I was like just stealing my dad's PC mags and like just for the demo discs. because they would have other stuff as well, which I didn't care about, and sometimes Dad probably never even got to see. Sorry. Recording this the day after Father's Day, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, it's like the price of games on PC is ridiculous. And the Steam sales aren't what they used to be, but they're still bloody good. Like,
it's because they were insane for a while there. And yeah. This is another twitch my personality is. Like, I really enjoyed the sniping. Like, they're just like the kind of just the waiting, like kind of writing down the, everything that I wanted. And like, just kind of, because it felt really good if like a day came and it's like, there it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sale for the next 24 hours at an even lower price.
Yeah. Maybe that was Australia's fun.
Refunding rules that probably ruined that, actually.
Yeah, possibly. Possibly. But yeah, I think, yeah, PC gaming is an expensive place to get to. But once you're there, the price comes down significantly than comparing it to consoles.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's part of the issue. I had like Switch 2 or Steam Deck or ROG Ally. The Steam Deck / ROG Ally was like really a. I'd probably actually still lean Steam Deck because it's a little bit cheaper in that ease of use and it, like how it feels better in the hand. But it was kind of a case. It really was. There were like so many factors. The big part was like, I actually do have a gigantic library of some stuff that I've never played. Like, it, like if I don't get the Switch 2, then I'm abandoning a lot of Nintendo stuff for a while. But it's not just because I'm leaving my Switch library in the dust does not mean.
Yeah. It doesn't mean you're going to miss out, I don't think.
And but yeah, this old ass PC I'm on right now, like if I'd bought Hollow Knight, not Hollow Knight, well, Hollow Knight Silksong here, I bet it would still run fine.
Yeah. Yep. And there's so much indie stuff out there that runs on just about anything that you can consider a computer. You know, shitty.
Anything that's still plugged in.
Yeah. Will run a whole bunch of indie games.
I don't know what the standard of school laptops in Japan, in Australia is anymore, but if they're on the same curve as they were when I was in school, I'd still like maybe they can play Half-Life 1 at this point.
Hey, my school network, when I was at school, we had Doom set up on, and it was, you know, it wasn't old then because I was, yeah, you know,
Doom. I was about to say Doom, you would have been in school when that came out.
Yeah, like, yep. So we could play Network Doom on it. And I had the passcode.
Yeah, you had way better PCs at your school than I did, yeah. Dude.
It was a brand new school, so.
We had like these 2-3 color screen apples, and like Bolo was like the only game that would run. I remember eventually the library got 2 or 3. If you remember those like Millennium Max, like the like really bulbous ones that looked like a piece of fruit and there was like color at the back.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The one from Zoolander.
The Zoolander one.
Yeah, the Zoolander
one. Google it. The plans are inside the computer, so we have to smash it open and get them.
Yep.
Yeah, I think we've got 3 of those for a school of like 700 and something people.
Yeah, wow.
Those were the high end. Those were the super duper high end ones. To be fair, those actually worked. If you wanted a net browse, like you weren't sitting there like going, okay, just got PC classes back then. It was like make a spreadsheet, and it would take the entire period just because it took so long to fucking load everything. And because half of us were dicks and just went to hamsternaps.com and like just left it playing.
Does Hamsternaps still exist? I don't know.
We're getting off topic a lot here. That was a period in time, man.
It was. Those animations that just went around the world.
Oh, it doesn't.
Oh.
I'm actually a little bit sad. It looks like I spelled it correctly, but I'm going to just pretend that it was a typo and it's still out there.
It's still there. It'll be on the old What's the Internet Archive thing. It'll still be there.
Wayback Machine.
Yeah, that's the one.
Oh, man, bless the Wayback Machine. But yeah, yes. It is with a, like, in some ways it has gotten so much easier because I got USB. Like, it's big guess that anybody born, probably half the people listening to this even, like, don't know what it is to not have a USB slot. But even just plugging shit in used to be a fucking nightmare.
Yep. But I remember when plug and play was the selling point of any new thing. You could just plug and play. Like, it became a selling point. Now it's expected because it just
It should
needs
be.
To.
Like, I don't understand why it wasn't there from the beginning to get go. Like, why did mice have to have these weird-ass pins? Like, who...
And drivers.
Who
and,
was like... Yeah, it has to be turned the exact angle and, like, very precisely put in, or you might bend one of them, like... Because fucking video game controls are doing it. Like, Sega and Nintendo had it figured out.
Yeah, there was some odd stuff in PC design that has been... And, look, a lot of PC is a lot easier. you were talking about looking at your new build and how there's still complications, but it is significantly easier. I remember
it's easier than it was in the 90s. I'm just not so sure it was easier than it was 10 or 15 years
yeah.
ago.
Yeah. I mean, getting things running these days is way easier than it used to be.
Oh, yeah, to be fair, like my old copy of Jazz Jackrabbit, we could not get the music to work. Like it would work, but it would just stop.
Yeah. Something sound card related, because some weird driver issue or something. And now that everything's handled centrally, that stuff seems to be, you know, you still have problems with computer games, but nothing to what it used to be. Nowhere near what it used to be.
Yeah, like the build, I actually expect even building's probably easier than it was, but like I'm still looking there going, boy, there's a whole lot of like, you really need to like measure things. Or even when I upgraded the graphics card in my current computer, when I went from the 680 to the 970, which was actually felt like a fucking meaningful upgrade. Thanks, Coxie, because I basically got that for free. I just gave Cox the money to ship it to me, and then he shipped it to me because, I don't know, I'm assuming that man like buys a new graphics card every 2 years or something.
He does.
That's about, and like, I guess he bought a fancy one because he had like a 3-fan configuration on his So I guess this is one of the nice 970s. From a lot of research I've heard, is like there's not really much point in buying the overclock super special edition. Just get whichever one of the cards is the cheapest. But I was scraping metal, getting that thing inside my case, like actually scraping metal, and like it barely fits. Like there was no way to neatly put it in there. I was like,
yeah.
So building from scratch is still not something I would recommend for most people. Like I still sometimes see people on the social media say it is way easier now. Anybody can do it. Like,
it is easier, and it was my first job.
Easier.
But, you know, so, like, compared to what it used to be when I was doing it as a job, it's 1,000 times easier. Because it is much like a puzzle in that things will only fit slots in one certain spots and you can't really fuck it up. If you do get something wrong, it just won't turn on. You won't do any damage, you know, so... Yeah, unless you're forcing something into somewhere it doesn't belong, then you're not
going to break it. Or if it just doesn't fit. Like, that's my main concern now. Yeah. Like,
And they're way, like, the cases these days are way friendlier on your fingers. You used to cut yourself with alarming regularity on the old cases.
You used to be like, okay, so you're applying for a PC build and shot. Have you had your tetanus shots recently?
Yeah, basically. Kind of. They used to make them out of razor blades and glass, you know?
Yeah, to be fair, I feel pretty confident with like putting more RAM in or changing an SSD. In fact, it's probably easier to put an SSD in a PC than a PlayStation 5 at this point. Like, that's
it. Really, it's just as long as there's a spare slot, it just slots in. One screw, you're done. Yeah,
it still boggles my mind that there's apparently different RAM configurations for like Intel and AMD processors. That was when I learned that. I was like, "Oh, are you fucking serious?" But I also learned that AMD is kicking in Intel's ass at the moment.
AMD's doing really well, yeah.
Especially for, like, the processors. They're also doing well in their graphics. I don't know if they're selling that well, but, it seems that the current RX graphics cards are...
The biggest problem with AMD graphics cards has always been the driver support, which isn't as good as NVIDIA's. So NVIDIA, you get regular updates, sometimes too many, but...
I was actually watching videos because I've been down this rabbit hole for the last few days. Seems like the RX... God, fucking names of these things. Give them sensible names, people. One thing Apple got right. The RX 9070 XT, fuck, has actually caught up to the 5070 Ti in... Not in every... Because it's always a game-by-game basis, but, like, on average, it seems the performance has improved more than NVIDIA's has.
Yeah, nice. Good. That's good.
And, like, it's not so far behind in ray tracing anymore, either, so it's...
And ray tracing. So, it's nice.
I would like to have it on. Like, I would...
Yeah, it's nice. Don't get me wrong, but also...
Like, if they're at regular retail price, and you're looking at, like, probably in Australia, about $200 difference between the cards. It's not it's not insignificant.
Yeah. Yep.
But that's the one thing I really hope does go back to normal. I would just like to see prices just be prices again.
Yeah. I don't think it's getting cheaper again.
I don't think we're ever going to... 10 years, maybe. Who knows? But yeah, I don't think NVIDIA is suddenly going to launch the 60 series of graphics cards at a reasonable price point. That's not going to happen. But at some point, like, they stay at RRP and like maybe have small sales at Christmas or something instead of, because it just fluctuates now. Like, it's still like,
yeah,
crypto is basically toast. Like, there are still the bros out there. But
it's a dying breed. But then AI is coming in now, and they're using all the processors for that, which is.
Although, I mean, we'll see how long that. There are some useful things there, and then some not useful things there. And we'll, like, every time I look at like the financials of that industry, and to be fair, there are people who could read that better than I can, but it doesn't seem like they're really making that much money or helping productivity all that much.
No, no. Almost every reporter said it's not helping at all.
I mean, there are uses, like, for example, DLSS, I guess, is technically that. And, like, yeah, sure, that's great. That's awesome. Like, yep. More of that. Or even, like, is a hypercharge control F. It's, like, really useful, but.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, there are absolutely, like, and I think that the coverall term of AI has become,
because yeah,
it should be generative AI. You know that ChatGPT,
the LLM type stuff.
Yeah, the deep learning.
So every time I think about the stuff that's like actually useful, it's like we always kind of had tech that was doing this thing anyway, and this is just like an evolution of that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, definitely the idea of like, fuck, what was that video I was watching, and like being able to do or on my phone even like. Being able to word search a photo is actually a cool little thing, but is that necessarily? Because my air conditioner remote control has an AI button.
Yeah, yeah. My washing like, machine does. My washing machine says AI, and what it boils down to is it remembers your most used cycle.
I'm pretty sure with my aircon, it's like averaging like. It may be more sophisticated. It may be like measuring the air temperature outside versus what I am setting at. But I think that they could have done that before. I'm pretty
They've
sure.
They've just slapped the AI on everything.
Fucking Soul Calibur. This is, I know why this thing I always go back to, and we're in console game. That never came out on PC. Have any of them come out on PC?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The more recent ones have. I've got the last one on PC.
But yeah, so we'll swing back around. But yeah, I still remember like Soul Calibur noting I was like felt like I was getting worse at it, like when my Dreamcast was all shiny and new. And then one day, for whatever reason, I think I just booted up without putting the memory card in. And I kicked the computer's butt. Like, being able to, like, remember people's habits of button presses goes back to at least 1999.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. Max Payne, the original Max Payne, had a dynamic difficulty on it. You know, things like that. So, yeah, we've had this sort of tech for ages. It just wasn't called AI. It's just been called that now.
Instead, it was like the actual artificial intelligence, which is, you know, people in games like pretending to be smart, and like it was actually fairly accurately.
Yeah, yeah.
But now I guess where I'm kind of hoping that like PC gaming keeps on heading, and I felt like it's where it was at when I bought this PC, and then it like wobbled for a bit, and we're getting it back there, which is it really is like just a secure premium for single player play games. At least you're not going to get any crises anymore.
No,
but you're always going to get if you want. The stable ass frame rate. Like you're just going to get like the more refined version.
Yeah. I mean, there's still bad PC ports, especially console
Last of Us.
Developed ones first. Yeah. It's a bit of a crapshoot with Sony stuff. You never know. Some of it's been terrible. Some of it's been fine. Some of it's been great. The God of War ones were fantastic. Last of Us 2 was really good, but Last of Us 1 was abysmal. So, you know, it's a bit of a lottery shoot with games developed primarily for console.
I think it's going to be improving. Just like, I mean, this is very anecdotal, but again, like, I'm sure from PC parts, you've walked down Denden Town in Osaka now for the last few years. You're seeing a lot more gaming PC stuff there than you used to, which implies that Japan is starting to take notice, which is probably where most of the bad PC ports have actually typically come from, because it's just never been a priority for them. Like, oh, and people don't buy PCs, do they? They're just going to refine the PlayStation 5 version a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. So, and Square Enix is pretty guilty of that. They tend to put out PC ports that work. And that's about all you can say about them. They never do anything super special with them. But yeah, it's an interesting place. But I in this day and age, it's getting less and less concerning for me to have the consoles. My consoles are getting more and more dusty. I used to play everything pretty equally right up until the last gen of games. But this gen, I feel like I'm playing all my consoles significantly less. It seems to be almost all PC, because most of the games that release on the day on PC, and if I've got the graphics card, why wouldn't I get the PC version, you know?
It probably helps if you're, like, rigged up to your TV. For me, there's definitely still something that says, like...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because I will always go bigger on the living room TV than I will on a computer monitor.
Yeah. And I've got this PC that we're doing this recording on, which is still a capable gaming PC to do the mouse stuff. So there's quite a few games that I like to sit in front of my computer and play with the mouse and keyboard. But, you know, for that big screen experience, I've got the TV one. And it's amazing the games I've gone back to. And we've talked about it before, these old games that look amazing in 4K. And that's all that's happened, is they're at a 4K resolution. On the telly, these old games, like, you know, from 2015, Tomb Raider and Just Cause and things like that look awesome. And they're so much fun to sit back and play. And they're the sort of games I want to play on my couch.
Yeah, and you're going to be able to, like, max that shit out, like, very easily.
Yeah, yeah. It's got room to spare, you know, but it looks good.
Is that also partly because we've lost that type of genre? Like, it wasn't that long ago, I was kind of complaining at, like, Sony needed not just keep on making the third-person action thing. And now I'm like, Sony, please go back to it, because what you did instead was really dumb.
Yeah.
Like, make a lot of those and then, like, an occasional Astrobot or something. I'd be like that.
Yeah. It'd be interesting. I'd like to see Sony do a first-person shooter or something, not a bloody piece of shit.
All that's happened is that, Helldivers 2, like, it doesn't have to be shit. Like, Helldivers 2 does seem legitimately good. But they've wasted so much money that, like, what we could have had.
Anyway, I think we've just about plumbed the depths of PC gaming. Any final statements?
Yeah, I really wish the graphics cards were more affordable.
Yeah.
It is ridiculous. I really don't know. I have to wonder what the profit margins are on those things.
And I don't know what you... Like, I've got a 5080 in my TV. One. There isn't a game... That's a beefy card, right? But yeah. It's a card that's at least $1,000 cheaper than a 5090.
Again, the 5090 is more expensive than my entire PC.
Exactly.
Like, comfortably. It's not like on the
and
edge.
I'm playing games. There isn't a game that I have played that I've immediately set to max on everything and played in 4K with the 5080. So what's the 5090 for? That's what I'm asking.
Enough to, like, wonder if it's like a... In a certain mentality, you could say it would be future-proofing, but, like, wouldn't it make more sense to just buy another graphics card in a couple of years' time?
Oh. You save $1,000 immediately, and then you save another $1,000, and you get the next 80 series card, you know, in 2 years' time.
Although the Titan, I guess, existed.
Yeah.
Back in 2012, and I was like, no, I'm going to feel like I'm living the premium life with my 80 series.
Yep. Yep. So I don't know what the 5090 is for and who it's for, except for people that